WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. An official go, the Defense Department accepting the Persian Gulf nation Qatar's gift of a jumbo 747 airliner to be a temporary Air Force One. Boeing is working on renovating two other planes to be the president's official ride in the sky. South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa reacting to President Trump at the White House before reporters, accusing that nation's government of allowing systematic killing of white South African farmers.
Coming back to this issue, which I really would like us to talk about, and talk about it very calmly. We were taught by Nelson Mandela that whenever there are problems, people need to sit down around a table and talk about them.
No confirmation of any such genocide in South Africa. The Archdiocese of New Orleans has agreed to pay nearly $180 million to victims of clergy sexual abuse under a settlement announced today to be paid after the Archdiocese comes out of bankruptcy. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
The Brewers surrender to the Orioles. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, Milwaukee's Caleb Durbin tied it up in the ninth, but top of the 11th, the Orioles' Adley Rutschman drove the ball deep into left field on the Orioles TV network.
He didn't get a great jump off the first base. Get up, ball.
Deep to left, Adley Rutschman toward the wall.
Yeah. It's gone! An ice-breaking three-run shot. Adley Rutschman goes right on left, goes out to left, and the Orioles have opened it up here in the 11th.
His 14th RBI, and the Orioles have busted it wide open here in the top of the 11th.
The Brewers running out of arms at the end of the game. Trevor McGill, Tyler Alexander ended up losing 8-4 today at AmFam Field. The crew missing out on the sweep, but winning the series 2-1. The Orioles snapping an 8-game losing streak. Up next, the crew heads to Pittsburgh for a 4-game weekend series against the Pirates. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. The One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Yeah, that's what they're calling it. The One Big Beautiful Bill Act, because, you know, screwing over working people act just doesn't have the same kind of ring. Passed, you know, as you know it would, like thieves in the night, 1 a.m. is when the they're moving on that. And understand, you know, the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. What could be wrong with it? What could possibly be wrong? Now, understand, selling this as utopia. It's going to be the greatest thing ever. It's going to help working people somehow. But we're going to keep the expiring tax cuts because you kind of have to. You don't want to upset everybody all at once. But in the mix, what are we doing? Well, they've added some new little wrinkles to curry favor here and there. But there's a whole bunch of money. And one of the things I found, $50 billion for Trump's border wall that I thought Mexico paid for or was going to pay for. Evidently, $50 billion to start for that. And there's more. They're going to increase the debt ceiling because, you know, that's only good when we can use it against Democrats. And remember, these are the people who told us they were going to solve our budget deficits. We're going to end that. We were going to then pay off all of our debt. These are the people who are screaming about debt. This only makes it worse. Over the next decade, extending just the Trump tax cuts, going to cost about $4 trillion. That's not even all of the additional spending on the border, which will be another $1 trillion. And, well, all of it. So we're adding another $5 trillion to the debt that they were going to pay off. And how are they going to do it, you ask? Of course, we've been talking about it. They're going to cut Medicaid, about $600 billion. They're talking about stripping out of that. Millions of people uninsured. Millions of people not being able to access it. Because understand, if we're going to save $600 billion to pay for tax cuts for rich people, what does that mean? Well, we know what it means. It means poor people, working class people, you're screwed. Because those are the savings. They're also going to cut $600 billion from clean energy. You may remember the Biden administration had this whole clean energy plan that was going to be electric vehicles, going to be clean power production, renewables, energy efficiencies, you know, better home heating, even nuclear power we were going to get into. Gone. Cut. Never mind climate change. No. We're going to make dirty stuff great again. Also, going to go after the student loan program. We're going to cut student loans. They say about $300 billion in savings by overhauling the student loan program, which means you're going to create bigger and more costlier requirements for repayments of loans because you got to generate some money somehow. So get it from the people who you've sold that the only way they're going to be able to make a living is to go to invest in themselves with an enormous student loan. Whereas in past generations, we covered that because we believed education was a good thing. Not so much. They're also ending certain loan and repayment programs, which means, again, who's going to take it on the chin? The poor and the working class who are trying to crawl their way up. Also, you know, while those poor and working class people are crawling their way up, they're not going to do it with any food assistance from the government because we're going to cut about $300 billion. Also going to require states to pick up a portion of it. And this is the interesting part because states are already struggling. States are already having a hard time paying their end of it. All this is responsibility shifting. And they want to expand work requirements for people on food stamps. Okay, fine. How about we make sure there are jobs available? No, this is just about, again, like with the Medicaid stuff, a way to put an obstacle in the way of people from getting things that they need. But you know what's in there? $175 billion for a big, beautiful missile, Golden Dome missile defense system. Kind of reminded me of Reagan's Star Wars. Again, $175 billion. The Golden Dome. And they're going to do it in 3 years. So here's the weird thing. Is Trump thinking big or is this just a slush fund? Is this a big call to action? Because, you know, the Chinese or, you know, Canada is going to bomb us. It's going to be led by the general over at Space Force. I guess the plan is we're going to intercept, you know, space lasers and other things from around the globe. And it sounds great. Look, I love a great sci-fi novel. I love a great sci-fi movie with pew, pew, pew. I do. Because it sounds great. It sounds impressive. But how's that going to help the working class? Because we'll probably end up outsourcing the jobs to China anyway. Now, understand, most Americans are struggling to pay the rent. They're struggling to keep health insurance. They're struggling with job insecurity. And this is a government that told us they were going to be efficient. They have a Department of Government Efficiency. That was going to get rid of the waste, fraud, and abuse. Now you got a government that wants to spend billions of dollars on space weapons. Even though our military is saying, what? We aren't under any serious threat from our neighbors. Canada, Mexico, North Korea. Yeah, we can deal with that. Really? And like I said, it reminds me of Reagan's Star Wars, which when I was a kid sounded great. We're going to be able to, it's like Missile Command when I was a kid playing Atari. What happened? We got nothing. We spent lots of money. And I shouldn't say that. We bankrupted Russia. And that was the goal of it. If you go back and you read about it, it wasn't really about that the technology could work. Although, look, I'm all in favor in investing in things that bring new technologies or push the envelope. But no, this was all about bankrupting the Soviet Union. And it did its job. Now you've got Congress. Republicans in Congress have backed the project. They've promised $25 billion up front. Democrats have called it a slush fund. You know what it is. And understand that there is no clear plan on how it's going to work. Only fantasy. And you got to wonder, where did the fantasy come from? Is this a Doge boy? Is this Elon Musk going, hey, here's a way for me to line my pockets even further? I mean, the reality is, you know, while we, the working class of this country, are tightening our belts, the Trump government seems ready to write the blank check to defense contractors for something that military folks are saying isn't a real need. Now, look, if it's going to create great jobs with health insurance and opportunity, okay, maybe we could talk about it. But, yeah, this is just seems like a rerun and a bad one. Seems like a bad rerun. Now, with that in mind, you had Donald Trump being questioned on the at the Capitol by reporters when he went to go beat up on Republicans. And Republicans asked him, how can you justify cutting, you know, the reporters asked, how can you justify cutting food assistance? And Trump, in the most Trumpian way possible, said the cuts are going to give everybody much more food because prices are going to come down. You're going to get more food by us cutting those programs. It's the same arguments that the Trump officials are making, the departments they head up. Lee Zeldin, for instance, EPA administrator. He's saying by laying off a whole bunch of people, cutting a bunch of staff, it's actually going to improve efficiency. They're going to meet all of their statutory obligations. Trump's picked to lead the IRS. Billy Long, former congressman from Missouri, Republican congressman, actually was encouraging people to claim a tax credit that doesn't exist. And he's going to head up the very organization to go after people like him. Think it's going to work? No, this is the thing. And look, he's not even the dumbest person in the cabinet. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem takes the cake right now. Questioned by Senator Maggie Hassan, was asked about if she could define habeas corpus, and she couldn't. She thought it was the ability for the president to do whatever he wants. The president has the ability just to deport people. And it's the legal principle. It requires the government to provide a reason for detaining or imprisoning. You got to have a reason to arrest me. And I've got to be able to see it. A writ of habeas corpus. I got to be able to see it. And yes, it's been suspended in times of war. For war criminals. But even then, they get a trial. And you've got Kristi Noem, who doesn't know. Doesn't know anything. And this is my problem with the people that they've put in. They're ideologues. These aren't professionals. These are yes people. And the worst kind of yes people. The yes people who don't even know what they're doing. They say yes without even knowing that it's right or wrong. And this is the frustrating part of where we are. Because what they're breaking is going to take decades to fix. And that's the plan. The plan is always, what did Grover Norquist say a couple of decades ago? I want government so small that I can drag it into the bathtub and drown it. This is what they're doing, and right in front of us. So when I see Elon Musk says, you know, I'm going to stop spending on politics for a little while, after making enormous donations in 2024 to get what he wanted, all of our information, regulators off his back, problems with the Department of Labor and the SEC and the IRS off his back, money well spent, and also access to massive contracts, perhaps like the Golden Dome thing. But Musk says in terms of political spending, he's going to do less in the future, less than he's done. He thinks he's done enough. But hey, if he sees a reason, to do political spending in the future, he's going to do it. But he doesn't see it now because he got everything he wanted. he got his wet dream list. And you and I, we're going to be the ones who have to pay for it. Because again, we have no idea what he's going to do with all of the data that they've mined. And we have no idea what they got. That's the thing. How bad was it? How much did they smash and grab? And what does it mean for each and every one of us? That's the question. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to be an interesting couple of weeks as the second 100 days. Oh, they're matching up to the first 100 in the corruption, the smash and grab, and the deplorable. But I want to hear your thoughts. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So it appears that the pharmaceutical giant Regeneron, it appears that they're going to get all of the information that people sent to 23andMe, because evidently there's a court-supervised bankruptcy sale going on. It appears that they're going to acquire this 23andMe, and well, the more than 15 million people who sent their DNA in and their health information, because hey, I just want to see where I'm from. Corporate America has now might have their greedy hands on it, and who knows what they're going to do, because as this story's being laid out, evidently this information can be treated as a corporate asset. Those words scare the you-know-what out of me, and here to share some thoughts on what this means. I've asked J.D. Branch to come share some thoughts. He's the big tech accountability advocate for Public Citizen. You can check out their website, citizen.org. J.B., thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rick. Appreciate it.
So walk me through this. What's going on? I know 23andMe went belly up or had some problems, now being taken over by this big pharmaceutical giant. How can that happen?
Yeah, so, you know, for some of your listeners, just to make sure, 23andMe is a DNA direct-to-consumer company. So you spit into a tube, you send it out, and you know, you get some feedback about your family history. And they had declining sales for a while. They had a data breach, where folks got harassed, where a lot of their data got spilled out, broadly speaking. And so as a result, you know, they just weren't hitting the bottom line and they filed for bankruptcy. And we have a pharmaceutical company that stepped in that they actually have a genetic database, and they saw this opportunity to buy millions, 15 million folks' DNA on the cheap. It's not unusual for companies to buy another company's assets, but this is really sort of the first time in U.S. American history where you have a large pharmaceutical company just wholesale buying and purchasing up folks' DNA, down to diseases, down to health history. And here's the crazy thing as well. It's not just an individual user's DNA. It also includes folks throughout their family tree. So if you didn't sign up for it, but your cousin put in their DNA, you also might be compromised as a result.
I remember when this started, people were going, oh, I might do this. I'm going, there's no way that I'm giving corporate America my DNA voluntarily. Because the argument I was making at the time, if the government asked you for this, you would lose your ever-loving freaking mind. But corporate America, you're willing to, yeah, just here, have it. By all means, without asking what can you do with it, what happens to it when you're done telling me, do you destroy it? Is there privacy here? I guess I'm not feeling any sympathy for these 15 million people who are going to have their DNA taken. But I look from a government angle going, shouldn't there have been somebody, some regulation? I know regulations are out of vogue right now, but you know, maybe.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we do have some regulations that look over healthcare laws like HIPAA with patient privacy, but the catch with that is it doesn't apply to direct consumer companies like 23andMe. So it's actually a huge loophole. And then the other sort of big issue, you know, HIPAA was written in the 90s. It was designed for like hard shell paper documents. It's not really designed for this digital era that we live in. And it sure is not designed for DNA. So we've now entered into this realm where folks are sharing their DNA with private companies, like you said, and there's nothing in US law that's going to cover, you know, genetics that is going to be, you know, partially owned or partially stored by these companies. So, you know, this story, quite frankly, might not end here. If something happened with Regeneron, they could package all of this DNA and resell it to someone else down the road.
Yeah, my mind goes into a whole bunch of places, but I want to make sure I'm clear. So they're not going to just, you know, start running 23andMe. You're not going to see 23andMe Regeneron version of this. This is just really a data sale.
Yeah, it's a complete data sale of 23andMe's DNA. I believe it's about 15 million users' DNA, and they're going to be transferring it from 23andMe over to Regeneron. And once that happens, you know, Regeneron can basically do what they please with it. Right.
Let me ask you about that then, because, you know, is there something that you could go, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say they're not going to use it for nefarious purposes, that there's something that maybe I don't understand, that you go, no, this is going to be good for us, that they have all of this information. They're going to be able to come up with a cure for whatever's next. Is there an argument for that?
That's going to be the argument that Regeneron's definitely going to be making, that there's going to potentially be these breakthroughs and whatnot. Let me propose the counter to that. You're seeing a lot of corporate government, you know, agreements that are happening. And so regardless of if you're on the right, regardless of if you're on the left, you know, if Regeneron decides to enter into a contract with, say, ICE and share that DNA information, you know, regardless of which administration is in power, Democrat or Republican, you're going to potentially be exposed. So there's all these sort of almost like sci-fi iRobot situations that are pretty concerning and should be very alarming for consumers.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, since you brought that up, my mind goes, because they're going after ending birthright citizenship. Maybe they're going to go after, if you're within the third generation, you're not a real American. We're going to come get, you know, first, second, then you're out. Who knows? Or maybe we fall out of favor with a particular country, and now you've got to, this could really, like you said, in a very sci-fi kind of way, be very scary. Now, this also brings to me, this is a small 15 million, not a huge number. I look at what's going on with our federal government. You got Elon Musk and his Doge ferrets, you know, going in and mining all of our data. The fact that this stuff is available, that corporate America has now got their hands on it, who knows what Musk and his ferrets are going to do. This tells me that, you know, we're really behind in legislating and regulating. And I know, again, you know, regulations have been, you know, somehow demonized. It seems to me this could be one of those moments where we start going, hey, how do we hold these corporations in check, and how do we protect ourselves?
Yeah, I mean, this shouldn't be a controversial issue in the halls of Congress, protecting your citizens' genetic data. You know, I think that's something that we should all be able to get on board. There are at least 10 states across this country that have some sort of DNA protections in terms of data privacy, and they got passed on a bipartisan basis. I mean, even something as simple as a right to delete, which some states have, which basically says that, you know, if a consumer doesn't want their information out there, they contact the company, they say, hey, delete my data, and the company has to do that. You know, that's not even a law on U.S. federal books as it is. So even something as simple as that, with this sort of situation that we have with 23andMe, there were folks who were trying to get their data deleted and the website kept crashing because it turns out that, you know, some of those 15 million folks had buyer's remorse. And so you have the website crashing, people can't actually delete it. I'd actually call on Regeneron to, you know, provide an expanded window to let some of those customers delete their data, because that's the only right thing to do, you know, when folks were trying to do it in the first place. So, yeah, completely agree. We are behind on a variety of things, particularly when it comes to this data privacy.
But again, you come back to, this is just one company. How many of these are out there? How many people have, without thinking of the consequences? Because look, I thought, you know, originally I'm like, well, okay, you swab your cheek, you send that in, they throw it away. You get, and without going, you know, no, they're going to hold on to that. And then the, what are they going to use it for down the road, started playing into my head. And the unknown is what I think what scares me. And allowing them the universe of possibilities, that, especially for stuff we haven't even thought about yet, I got a problem with that.
Yeah, and you know, just as a quick related, as you're bringing this idea up of like, what are they going to do in the future? You know, for some of your listeners, they may be aware of Henrietta Lacks, a Black woman who she had cancer, I believe it was cervical cancer, but she went to Johns Hopkins. We're talking about around the 1950s, and she had some of her DNA basically scraped by Johns Hopkins. And without her consent, they were able to create a lot of cures for a variety of medicines. And there's a lot of positive that came out of that, a variety of vaccines. That's all well and good. But Henrietta never consented to that. Her family members never received a dime. They ultimately did years later when they were required to, when Johns Hopkins settled and some of the drug companies settled with them. You're going to have a pharmaceutical company that has DNA data for millions of folks across the US. The big play here is making new pharmaceuticals that are gonna be, you know, almost designed directly for you, directly for me, maybe even some new cures. If that's my DNA, if that's your DNA, we're not going to be seeing a scent from that. And, you know, that's hugely problematic as well.
Yeah, but also, you know, look, I'm okay on a certain level, you know, of doing that kind of research. And as long as we go into it with our eyes open, knowing that that's a possibility, I don't know that this was something that was ever thrown out to those 15 million people as a possibility. And maybe it was in the 40 pages of three font legalese that nobody reads. This is where, again, I see government falling down on the job at the state and federal level of protecting citizens from, you know, these corporations who do have long-term aspirations that they're not allowing us or informing us of.
Right. And I mean, again, going back to some of those common sense solutions, you know, your data privacy, your healthcare privacy, it should not be able to be monetized to an asset form where one company, you know, files for bankruptcy and another company purchases, you know, your blood, your spit, your DNA. You know, there needs to be some common sense regulations around that. Like I said, a right to delete is just one small step towards correcting it.
Yeah. No, look, I have a lot of friends who are, you know, anti-government. They fear government. And I do too, to a large extent, but not as much as I fear corporate America. Once they get their hands on our information, nothing good can come of it. So last question I've got for you. What are the marching orders out of this? What's the hope that, you know, bringing this to light, what are you hoping to get done, accomplished, legislated, what?
Yeah, well, I mean, everyone has a role to play in these types of situations. If folks can reach out to their, you know, representatives demanding, you know, higher data privacy rights to delete, That's obviously huge, but we're really calling on Congress to, you know, modernize a lot of these privacy policies that are in existence right now, particularly when it comes to, you know, DNA storing, because currently there's no privacy laws that really cover this DNA storage. There needs to be a right to delete federally. That's something that folks can call for as well.
Yeah, I mean, it goes down to virtually everything, from the food you buy with your store cards to what you search for on the internet. There's a lot of data out there that corporate America's gathering, mining, and, well, profiting from. And again, I keep saying we're so far behind in regulating that stuff. But JB, I appreciate you sharing some thoughts, bringing this issue to my attention. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Eric.
JB Branch, big tech accountability advocate there at Public Citizen. Make sure you check out their website, citizen.org. We'll get links out on social media. What are your thoughts? Would you have given your DNA to a corporation? And would you be surprised if they sold it for profit? I want to hear it. Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Right back.
You're listening to Lake Air WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. A lingering shower to tonight, cloudy sky and a low in the low 40s. Sunshine returns for Thursday and Friday, highs of 60 to 65. And we'll stay in the 60s through the weekend and into Memorial Day, a slight chance of rain each day. Currently, it's 47 degrees.
Matt and Air on Air.
The Joint Finance Committee just had four meetings around the state of Wisconsin. The top three things of concern to people were education, health care, and child care. The Republicans stripped all of those things out of Governor Eber's budget. So I'm thinking about going next time just to make sure that they all put their phones down when I'm talking to them, because I have a feeling they're all playing Candy Crush because they're not paying attention to what people are saying.
Catch Matt and Air on Air at its new time, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So yesterday I got a lot of email from my comments about J.D. Vance and whatever the heck that was, attacking Joe Biden. And look, this is what the right has done masterfully. They've taken the Biden news, which is tragic, and they've turned it into an attack point. And again, our media, our mainstream corporate-controlled, drug-addled media, they've just, maybe not drug-addled. Let's go with stenographer media, because they've just come along and we're just reporting. Without reporting the reality that while Joe Biden has stage 4 cancer, prostate cancer, he was the guy who put money into trying to find a cure. And Trump is the guy who's taken that away. And here to share some thoughts on what our mainstream media is getting wrong, and maybe how we fix some of this. I've asked my good friend Will Bunch to come share some thoughts. Will's a national opinion columnist over at the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's also the author of After the Ivory Tower Falls, How College Broke the American Dream and Blew Up Our Politics, and of course, How to Fix It. Will, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So, you know, what do you make of the story that we're seeing with President Biden's cancer revelation? And I guess I got to get your thoughts on people like J.D. Vance, you know, doing, oh, we're so sorry. And then 20 minutes of attacks on Biden. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, the J.D. Vance thing, I mean, it just shows how the far right has totally lost any perspective, you know, where you get to the point where, you know, you're so kind of marinated in this broth of hatred towards liberals or whatever that, you know, you lose track of how that even sounds, you know, when you can't even pause to, you know, even if you want to spread this conspiracy theory, which is, you know, kind of obscene at this point of the situation, but even if you're going to do that, to not even express any kind of sympathy or condolences or
not even thoughts and prayers.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, there's different layers to this. I mean, there's the way Republicans are doing it, which is just laced with the vitriol and it's hateful. And then there's a lot of the mainstream media, which has just gone into the, oh, we're just asking questions mode, right? You know, for whatever reason, to torture myself, I guess, I kind of resumed occasionally watching Morning Joe after I banned it for like 4 months after Joe and Mika went to Mar-a-Lago. But and I was curious, actually, Monday morning after the Biden cancer diagnosis news came out, I was curious, like, how long it would take them to get into, you know, accusing the Democrats of a cover up, and what did the Democrats and what did they know, and did he avoid getting these tests to keep it from the public, and honestly, he might have, because, you know, I mean, look, you know, Joe Biden was human. He always struck me, and I always thought he actually, it should have been noted more that, I mean, he was a very, you know, vain, ambitious, driven person. And it wouldn't surprise me if he was thinking, like,
show me one president that wasn't.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It wouldn't surprise, you know, and it's funny. I mean, I wrote a whole book about 15 years ago about Ronald Reagan and his legacy. And, you know, even I can forget just how bad things were with his ability to serve as president. You know, people said he was lazy, he watched old movies all day, that he was really checked out during his second term. So we've had all of this before. And, you know, I didn't write this column. I could have, but others have already written it, and it's almost too obvious at this point. But, you know, it's just kind of obscene to focus on Biden's health and his mental acuity and whatever at this moment, when we're on the fulcrum between democracy and fascism in this country. And I mean, to me, I mean, this is honestly, you know, at least since I was a kid in the 60s, you know, in grade school. But since then, I mean, I feel like what's happening now is the biggest story of my lifetime. And, you know, for Jake Tapper to go on CNN and lead the news with his book for the first half hour of his show.
He's
every
got a
night.
Book.
Yeah. And he's doing it again tonight. Apparently, I just was looking at social media.
I wish I had an image of it. I would promote it for him as well, because I want him to do well. Because evidently, maybe they're paid by compensation. Maybe that's the new left media, or somewhat central media. Buy our books. It's the only way we're going to stay on air.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's it. And maybe that's it for CNN, because their ratings have been terrible. But the thing is, and what I did write about today, and the thing that surprised me, is one of my very first thoughts when I heard the news Sunday night about Joe Biden's prostate cancer is, oh my gosh, what, you know, what a bitter irony that this happens to the man who's really probably at his very best in terms of what he tried to do as a president and a political leader, was this idea called the cancer moonshot, you know. And basically, and it was a great name, honestly. And I didn't say this in the column. Maybe I should have waxed about this a little bit. The fact that, you know, what a great concept and idea, that, because it really speaks to the whole idea of America should be doing great things and we should have big dreams and big ambitions.
No, but we're too petty for that. Well, I mean, the sad reality is we're too petty to do big things, because we're mired in pettiness.
Well, that's what we're seeing right now, obviously, because, you know, and this was personal for Biden, because it was inspired somewhat by the, or inspired mostly in a way by the death of his son, Beau, from brain cancer at the young age of 46, you know, which was just another devastating loss for Joe Biden. And it helped, you know, his grief, I think, helped him to focus on this great idea that, you know, let's let's make curing cancer the moonshot, just like the moonshot was, you know, we set this crazy goal in 1961 of, you know, sending a man to the moon and safely returning him to Earth by the end of the 1960s. And people thought it couldn't be done, and America did it. And, you know, I was 10 years old when that happened, and it, when the moon landing happened in 1969. And, it, you know, at a very down time for this country after a year of assassinations and whatnot, you know, the moon landing was a real uplift. You know, I know there's a long debate about whether the space program was worth it or not, but nobody would debate, no one's going to debate that curing cancer, you know, which is just this curse that has plagued so many families in this country. You know, nobody would dispute that this was a great idea, except, I guess, for Donald Trump right. and his people, because, you know, Donald Trump, the president who literally ran on a platform of, quote, I am your retribution, unquote. You know, his number one retribution target is Joe Biden, who had the audacity to actually beat him in an election in 2020. And we've seen this insane, in some ways, determination to undo anything that has Biden's name attached to it, even if it's something that's like so good and so positive, you can't imagine why this would be reversed. And it's being reversed. And the most obscene example of this is cutting back the cancer research that was such a central project of Biden's presidency. We have seen, you know, and, you know, again, talking about the sins of the media, I can't believe how little media coverage this got. In fact, when I was researching my column, the only article that really had good coverage of this that I ended up relying on was on the website France 24. So it wasn't even American media that covered this report by, you know, Bernie Sanders, God bless him, and his Senate, you know, and his Senate researchers looked at what's going on with cancer research, and they found that in the first 3 or 4 months of this year, government spending on cancer research had already dropped 31% from this time, the same period last year.
But Will,
yeah.
We're saving money. We're saving money. Doge boy and
his
ferrets.
That's what DHS said, you know, in its statement, you know, and of course, they're eliminating waste, fraud, and abuse, right? Because we all know how wasteful and fraudulent those, you know.
Saving people with cancer is wasteful. Because they're only going to die anyway. Later, they're going to only die later anyway. So save money, let them go now.
Yeah, because that money can be used for tax cuts for wealthy people who know how to enjoy.
Now you understand.
How to enjoy life, yeah.
Now you understand. Now, this is one of those things, again, that I think needs to be highlighted. And I wish there were more people saying stuff like you're doing here. Because I've been saying that, you know, Doge Boy and his ferrets came in promising $2 trillion in cuts. There were going to be $2 trillion in savings from waste, fraud, and abuse, and immediately it was down to $1 trillion, and then, well, maybe $500 billion. And now they're claiming, what, $156 billion that they think they may have saved, even though when you look at the actual numbers, really suspect. You know, I've been saying, isn't this a moment for us to go, you know what? Actually, government spends money not horribly. We were told there was $2 trillion of just waste laying around behind this golden door and this fiery pit, and yet they couldn't find, but given the benefit of the doubt, $156 billion, which is a lot of money, but it's not $2
trillion. Yeah, and they really managed this skill of, you know, on one hand, not reducing the budget in any way that would actually benefit, you know, middle-class taxpayers or whatever. But yet, even in their less than promised cuts, they somehow find a way to cut the things that actually matter, or not spend money on the things that matter, whether it's air traffic controllers or
cancer research.
Or whether it's curing cancer. Yeah, I mean,
and this,
you know, it's heartbreaking to read about these people who are in these trials that are, you know, funded by national Institutes of Health NIH grants that are funding these research, these trial programs that some people who have no other hope left, they've, you know, they've tried chemo, they've had operations or whatever. And, you know, this NIH novel, never, you know, been done before therapy is now their last hope of a cure for their disease. And to have, you know, Elon Musk and his twerps just come in there and just eliminate the funding for these things willy-nilly, and having these researchers lose their jobs and these programs are cut short. I mean, it's just heartbreaking.
No, and, but here's, here again, but these are the people, my red hats will tell you, Donald Trump was the guy who got that right to try thing. So we have the right to try all of those experimental things that they just cut the funding for. That. So wait a minute. Hold on. It doesn't make a lot of sense. I have the right to try now nothing.
Yeah. And you know, what's going to happen is, I mean, the only, literally the only like good thing that can and will probably come out of this is after a half century of cynicism about and distrust of government that was, you know, partly fanned by legitimate stuff like the Vietnam War, for example, and was partly fanned by demagogues like Ronald Reagan before Trump. But all of that distrust of government, which has gotten us to the point where we are now, people are going to realize after this that it's like, hey, I didn't know, you know, I didn't know my Aunt Bertha was in a, you know, was in a cancer, you know, life-saving trial program that was funded by the government. I had no idea, you know.
No, but you go down the list and even, you know, I didn't know when Granny got the Meals on Wheels, that was government funding. I didn't know that when Granny got put in the nursing home and didn't have the money to pay for it, that was Medicaid. There's a lot of educational opportunities here for Democrats to say, look, this is what they're cutting. This is what it's for. This is how it's going to affect you. But I fear, as I've been saying, that the solutions will come out of the suffering, that we will learn what we used to do. And maybe when the cruelty of this administration comes to a merciless end, maybe we get back to doing things the right way.
Yeah, I mean, it's tragic that people will probably have to experience pain in their personal lives, you know, economic pain and or real pain from sickness, you know, to understand this. But it does seem, you know, it does seem like we're headed down that road. I mean, especially if wiser heads can't prevail in Washington, and if this current, you know, big beautiful budget bill gets through. I mean, you know, I mean, the cuts in Medicaid, the cuts in SNAP, food stamps, you know, I mean, these things are just obscene, and people are going to realize that it's, you know, it's not just the other, you know, I mean, they keep talking like with the Medicaid thing. I mean, they keep talking about, oh, we're going to get all the illegal immigrants off the program. And it's like, you know, I'm sure there are probably some undocumented immigrants in the program, and they'll be thrilled to get rid of those people. But they're killing an ant with a neutron bomb, because, you know, so many Trump voters in these red states are going to be hurt by these Medicaid cuts. And, you know, at some point, you know, when they get sick and they can't get an operation or they can't get the medicine they need, they're going to be pissed off, right? And
I'm hoping there will be an awakening. I fear, because of the power of the right-wing media, that it's not going to happen until there's a lot of real actual pain and suffering that hits a lot of people. Before I let you go, I got to get your thoughts. I know you're a Springsteen fan, right?
Oh, big time. Yeah.
I got to get your thoughts on the latest dust up between, What did Trump call him? A shriveled up prune?
Yeah, I mean,
atrophied prune.
Yeah, I mean, it's one thing that really interests me about the Springsteen thing is, in some ways it's similar, in some ways it's different. But I mean, certainly reminds me a lot of the band The Chicks, who were known as the Dixie Chicks back when this happened in 2004, because they were also in the UK, I believe, just like Springsteen is, when they criticized George W. Bush. And, you know, you saw people burning their records. And I mean, the twist was you know, we were about to go into a war, so that also affected people's feelings about it, I guess. But no, I mean, other than Trump having a freak out, it seems like the reaction to what Springsteen has said was very positive, and it makes you wish that more of our cultural leaders, you know, the people that the cultural, you know, music and actors and people that everyday folks who maybe aren't into this whole politics thing look up to, you know, I mean, I'm hoping more of them would speak out the way he did.
Absolutely. Because... But here's the thing. You see, yesterday Trump came out and he's now going after Kamala Harris's endorsements.
Beyonce, yeah.
Going after Beyonce, going after Springsteen, going after Oprah, because, you know, even though there's nothing illegal about it, it's what Trump does. It's the MO of what he does. But again, our media fell right for it. We're just reporting the news. It's not news. This is manipulation. This is propaganda. It's BS. And it's what Trump has always gotten away with and how he plays our media against we the people.
Yeah, the only problem is, you know, we haven't seen it yet with these types of people, but we're seeing it with, you know, judges and politicians, that they're finding the most, you know, pardon the pun, trumped up things to get the federal government to investigate these people. Yep. I mean, one thing I'm surprised it hasn't gotten more attention, because I find it kind of shocking, is this apparent federal investigation of Letitia James, the New York State Attorney General, is being investigated for, I can't get too far into the weeds, but filling out something on a relative's mortgage application or a house that she was helping a relative buy, that was the most innocuous anybody. And I just recently filled out a mortgage application, and it's the kind of thing that any of us could, would, and probably have done in terms of,
you shouldn't, you know, have said it, because now they're going to come after you for it.
Probably. Well, I can wish that would probably boost my profile, at least for the couple months before I went off to jail. So they can come for me if they want.
But, so now when you've got people like the guy in Ohio, Jim Jordan, saying that the government's been weaponized, this is what you're talking about.
Well, Jim Jordan led an investigation into the innocuous activities of the daughter of the judge who, presided over Trump's felony convictions in New York. His committee was investigating the judge's daughter because she worked for a company that once had a contract with some Democrats or something. You know, it was
or something. That's how it is, right there. Or something.
Yeah. I was going to say when they threatened Springsteen and Beyonce, they might be going through every mortgage application that, you know, Springsteen or, you know, Beyonce and Jay-Z or whoever filled out in their lifetime to find the same kind of thing. Or, you know, I mean, look how absurd these assault charges are against Representative McIver, the New Jersey.
Yeah, no, I'm right there. But Will, as always, great stuff. Hope people check out the column over at the Philly Inquirer. We'll get links out. Will Bunch, thanks so much, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, hey, Rick. Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Good stuff, as always. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. This Bruce Springsteen thing, do you think it's about Bruce? Or do you think it's more about chilling everybody else so nobody else comes out because they don't want the spotlight like this? I don't know. I'm thinking about it. I want to hear your thoughts. rick@thericksmithshow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1946. That was the day that Democratic President Harry S. Truman ordered the government seizure of the nation's bituminous coal mines. 800,000 United Mine Workers of America, led by John L. Lewis, had gone out on strike. A wave of strikes washed over the United States after World War II. As part of the war effort, most unions had agreed not to conduct work actions during the war. But as industry profits soared due to wartime government contracts, workers saw little improvements in their wages or working conditions. Pent-up worker frustration boiled over after the war. historian Jeremy Breacher had noted that the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics called the first half of 1946, quote, the most concentrated period of labor management strife in the country's history. The miners were part of that strife. They wanted improved wages, better health care benefits, and safety on the job. The strike had a ripple effect felt far beyond the coal fields. In early May, the Chicago Tribune warned, quote, the nation's worst coal strike tonight slowed the wheels of American industry toward a predictable full stoppage. Coal turned the wheels of industry, and the strike had drastically slowed mining. The government seized the mines and ordered the miners back to work. But still, the coal companies refused to meet the coal miners' demands. Unsatisfied with the resolution of the strike, the miners walked out again in November. The government fined the union $3.5 million, which it later reduced. President Truman called the work actions a rebellion against the government. But the determination of the miners forced the owners to agree to most of their demands. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So Republicans are busy. You got to give them credit. They're using the steamroller. They're doing their job, protecting the wealthy, the powerful. Because on Tuesday, the Republicans repealed the Biden-era rule that cracked down on bank mergers. Because you know what we need in this country? Bigger banks. We need bigger, too big to fail banks. Because, you know, what else are we going to do? The House voted 220 to 207 to dump the rule that was finalized by the Office of Comptroller of Currency last year. And it's going to make it harder to regulate. The Senate, 52 to 47 party line vote. It now goes to Trump's desk for signature. And what they've done is, with this repeal, the Republicans have advanced it under the Congressional Review Act. And also, it would prohibit any administration in the future from pursuing what is considered a substantially similar regulation on bank mergers. Because, look, why should we have the ability to say how big banks can get? It's their freedom. It's their right to be as big and do as many things to enrich themselves that ultimately we end up having to pay for every time they crash the economy. Understand, this is the Republican hatred of regulation. They're very open, very honest. And sadly, you know, most Americans have bought it. I'm in this spot where regulations are a place for a reason, generally because somebody abused something. And I also love when people throw back when Democrats did regulate something and it worked in their benefit as somehow it's good, that it must have been done by a Republican. For instance, a friend of mine was telling about his neighbor who had a driveway done, and the contractor did a horrible job. And this neighbor was telling him, well, you know, the law, I can go and I can recoup, you know, I think three times the amount, and I can do all this stuff. I've got all these consumer rights. And the guy's a red hat, saying, yeah, I got all these consumer rights, without understanding that Trump is gutting the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the very place that gave him those rights. And this is the problem of the world that we're in. He's cheerleading all of the things that Trumpers are doing, and all on board, and it's undoing the one thing that he actually, it's great, look what I can do. Yeah, welcome to the brave new world. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. Appreciate the time and all of that. If you miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Interesting times. Take a deep breath. Find each other. Organize. We will get through this. We will, I'm telling you. But thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. House Republican leaders have unveiled changes to the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, big budget and tax measure, revealing results of backroom deals cut by Speaker Mike Johnson with moderates and hardliners trying to get the votes necessary. New Medicaid work requirements kick in a few years earlier. There are more cuts to green energy tax credits. Deductions for state and local taxes on your federal return are increased. Wall Street major indexes closed sharply lower thanks to Treasury yields, which went up because they weren't attracting buyers for U.S. debt. Federal judge in Boston rules that the Trump administration's deportations of eight men convicted of violent crimes to South Sudan unquestionably violated the court's order by not giving them adequate due process. Two women arrested and charged in the New Orleans jailbreak, accused of helping several of the escapees evade capture. Five of the 10 escapees still on the run. This is ABC News. Israeli